In brightest day,
in blackest night.
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and hear the lamentation of your women.
And welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio, and we're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter Duralia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, professor of comic history at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your iron fist.
Karate punching the world of comic books with a flaming chop.
Oh, ho, ho.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
Yes. Right. Chris, welcome again to our weekly endeavor here.
Weekly endeavor. Walt, we are extremely exciting today.
Exciting every week.
Well, we're exciting, true. We're extremely excited today because we have a guest today with us.
Right.
And we have the foremost aficionado on Blue Beetle comics and comic book lover, Mr. Brian McGinley. Is here today. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, everybody. Thanks. Thank you very much, Chris. That's awesome.
How did we scoop the foremost Blue Beetle scholar?
Well, I had an opening, and you guys, you got lucky. You got real lucky. There you go.
We're honored to have you here, Brian.
Excellent.
We're looking forward to your input. And the way the show goes, Brian, I'm sure you listen every week.
Yes, I do. Right. Absolutely. I haven't missed one.
Chime in with any thoughts, any kind of corrections, usually with Chris. You'll have a lot of questions.
Yeah. No, absolutely, I will. I'm a little nervous, so
right. you'll be
might
fine.
Take me a while to warm up.
You'll be fine. As you know, every week we start with comics, new comics that, today being Wednesday, are hitting local comic book stores worldwide.
Excellent.
Worldwide. Not just in Hamilton, Brian. You know, we are an international show. People actually listen to us all across the world.
They read comics in Europe and Asia?
They do. Hard to believe.
Wow.
And they're just as excited about Wednesdays as we are.
Wednesday is always awesome for a comic book fan.
Yes.
It's sort of a weekend in the middle of the week for us.
We always like to say it's a little Christmas in every week.
Ah, that's good. Yeah, I like that better.
And we're not trying to be overly religious here or anything. Like, you know, it can be any religious
Absolutely. It can be non-denominational.
That's right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So this week we are going to look at new comics that have come out this week.
Very cool.
And you know what? We're going to continue on with the look of all the new 52 this week. I've chosen four or five different of the DC comics because you know what? There's a lot of main characters that are coming out this week.
Last week was a bit of an off week in terms of you got your Batman, I think, last week.
Well, there's a Batman every week.
It was kind of. But this week we got Aquaman, Geoff Johns. Ivan Rice.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Geoff Johns and Ivan Rice. That's the team. That's the combo. That's the duo that did everything for
Green Lantern. I wonder if now are they going to attempt to do something with Aquaman? Because really, you know what? Superman's been done to death. Batman's been done to death. Wonder Woman's been done to death. Not always that well, but you know. And then Green Lantern came from out of nowhere. Really, and the Flash. Like, you know, Geoff Johns was huge on the Flash for a long time. So really, the last of the big characters. Really, I mean, aside from maybe Hawkman, but last. The big characters is Aquaman that they really haven't done anything with. You know, Peter David years ago tried to do something with the whole hook for a hand thing. If anybody can do something new with Geoff Johns, I think it might be him.
Aquaman hasn't had his definitive story yet. He doesn't have the one story that you kind of go, remember that in Aquaman.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
true.
Geoff Johns might be the one. Remember years ago on that Saturday Night Live skit? Sinbad was on it.
Yeah.
He was playing Black Lightning.
That's right.
And nobody knew him, and he couldn't get in to the thing.
Right, right, right.
But
What people forget about that is Aquaman comes in with all the shrimps and hors d'oeuvres.
There was always another joke about, you know, Aquaman always being the guy that watches the Justice League, the monitor. He's always on monitor duty because nothing ever happens in the water, right?
Yeah.
Well, he's a famous character, but recently he's had that lame-o. You know what I mean? He's the lame guy. He's the guy who swims.
Like, if you're betting on a long shot, if you're throwing money down on what's going to make it, what's not, I mean, Vegas odds are good on Aquaman.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
All right, let's keep going. Oh, guys. I hold in my hands a beautiful copy of Superman number 1.
Superman number 1. Now, if that was the original Superman 1, I got to ask the price guide authority here. If that was the original Superman number 1, roughly what would that be selling for?
Yeah.
This kind of shape you're talking about, anywhere from a half to 1 mil.
Wow. $1 million.
$1 million.
For a comic book?
$1 million.
Go out and look in your attics and in your basements for comics, everybody, because you know what? You could have $1 million comics.
And contact Walt through the show.
Yep.
I will steer you straight.
Contact Chris Owen first, who will then I will contact Walt because he's the store owner. But,
right.
You know, but don't, we'll make sure you get at least $5 to $10 out of it.
Yeah.
Right. So Superman, who do we have? George Perez.
Yeah.
Writing, though.
So George Perez is writing. You know, it's kind of interesting because normally he would be doing the penciling. Mm-hmm. And now this he's
a famous artist.
Yeah. Very famous.
So who's drawing?
Jesus Marino.
Jesus Marino.
He's a great artist as well. He actually did a lot of work with Carlos Pacheco. He's a very, very renowned artist.
He used to be the corner man and out for Ali, wasn't he?
I think so,
Carlos Pacheco?
Cut me, Mick. Cut me. Right. Oh, sorry. That's Rocky. Sorry.
Yeah, I think that was Bernie. Anyway, let's move along. All-Star Western, number 1. Chris, you've also given me here.
Yeah, because it's got Jonah Hex in it. Mm-hmm. So, not an overly popular character, but, I mean, did warrant a movie in the last year.
Not an overly popular movie, either.
No, that was a big... Yes,
sadly
it did
no.
not do well.
Sadly
That's
no.
true.
Yeah.
Mind you, though, his actual comic has gone on for ages.
Yes.
I mean, like, Jonah Hex has been on the scene for... I don't know how long.
72. All-Star Western number 10.
Western, yeah.
But even this most recent incarnation has been going for some time.
Yeah.
You know, which surprised me. And now he lost his comic, and he's just continuing in All-Western number 1. So
All-Star Western.
All-Star Western.
Which is a play on All-Star Western, where he first appeared in.
Which makes sense to going back to the original sort of comic.
And
yeah.
It's the same team, right? Like, it's still Justin Gray.
So they're obviously hoping that the audience will carry over to this new book.
And the cover is an homage to the Clint Eastwood, My Name, The Man with No Name. Hang 'em High, or whatever it was.
Yeah. Is it really? You're right. I think you're right.
All right, Chris, then you've also given. Oh, Chris, you know how to pick them. The Savage Hawkman, number 1.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Tony Daniel and Philip Tan.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Is this book? I mean, you talked earlier about now why? Here's my question. Now, why are we all high on Aquaman and we're not giving Savage Hawkman a chance?
You know, it's a good point because really, I think because Aquaman has always been such the underdog character, right? Hawkman has never been made fun of the way Aquaman has, right? So, I mean, Hawkman is a classic character. He's been around for I don't know how long.
Yeah, he's been way longer than Aquaman. Yeah.
But Aquaman had his own TV show when we were kids.
Well,
and that made him quite big.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I mean, kids knew him for that. Hawkman never had his own.
Hawkman had its cartoon.
But he never had, the Superman and Aquaman out.
No.
You know what I mean? Which Aquaman had. Yep. So I always find Aquaman's popularity does this strange, up and down type thing.
True.
And also, it's got to be this Jeff Johns, Ivan Rice. They've got the team. It's a well-known team.
Right.
But I don't know, Hawkman might be good. I thought the art was great in there.
A little bit of comic history for you guys. Did you guys know that All-Star Comics number 5, way back 1941 or whatever it is, it introduced Hawkgirl, Hawkwoman, Hawkgirl?
Okay, his sidekick.
Right? She was the first female superhero.
You're kidding.
Really? Even before that Red Tornado character?
Yeah, predated
Ma Hunkle.
Ma Hunkle, yeah.
Yeah. First female superhero. She's credited with being the first female heroine.
Far out. Before Wonder Woman, then.
Before Wonder Woman, yes.
Mm. Fantastic. Wow, I did not know that.
And we're going to save this one for last because homeboy Francis Manapul got the helm of Flash number 1.
Yes. And
what are the odds with Flash?
I think it's got to be good. It's got to be good. If I'm not mistaken, Francis Manapul's doing he's doing the writing, but I think he's also doing he's doing the art as well. So he's doing two duties on this one, and you know what? I think it's great. Hometown kid, from Toronto anyways, and he's
close enough.
Close enough. And he's been doing great for the industry, and well, I hope it's going to be good.
Right, I hope it's going
to
be good.
I haven't had a chance to read it yet, so I don't know.
One thing I'm noticing, going through the list here, is that DC's getting a lot of artists doing the writing chores now.
Yeah,
like George Perez,
yeah.
Only known really for his art. You know what I mean? He's so good.
Yeah.
Now he's writing Superman. You've got, Francis Manapul,
yeah,
then
Jack
also.
Doing a lot of writing too.
Tony Daniel. I mean, like, you know what I mean? These guys are all
these guys
artists,
are
you know?
Yeah.
And now they seem to have gone over to the other, the other side.
Right, all right. Okay, we're going to skip over now to, Chris. You know what? When it's Wednesday and you need a new comic, who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters!
Ghostbusters number one.
Yeah, so this is crazy. You know, all of a sudden now, out of nowhere, we've got a Ghostbusters comic that, you know, I haven't seen one of those in ages. For some reason, there seems to be this slow resurgence of Ghostbusters going on. You know, at the conventions that we were all at, we saw lots of people dressed up as Ghostbusters.
They had that little core group of guys. They had their little station there where you go in and you take pictures with them.
And
they have their own booth.
Yeah,
almost.
That's like a club.
Yeah,
like,
if
you want to become a Ghostbuster or something like that, like you sign up and you get to make your own costume or some such thing. I don't know if you actually get slimed or not, but, you know, it's one of these weird
things.
Maybe
it costs extra.
Yeah. If they candy a little extra for that.
Well, Chris and I were talking too about the sexy girl Ghostbuster costume. I've seen that a lot lately, and it's usually a girl in like tight shorts and a tight shirt, but it's got the Ghostbuster thing.
Yes.
And it's that combination of like childhood favorite, you know what I mean, show with this, you know, girl dress. Sorry. Sorry, getting too spicy for the comic show. I'll tone it down. Is it really? No.
But you're right. I mean, Ghost Riders is a property.
Or Ghostbuster, whatever. You know.
What did I say?
Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider. Oh, that was a good show.
Ghostbusters is gold, right? It's a property that shouldn't just go away.
No.
It's no.
And,
it should be nurtured and should always be current.
Yeah.
Because
it's a great property.
It's a great property.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Finally, we're going to talk about Marvel and FF number 9.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting because, I specifically picked this one because our guest with us today is a big fan of the comic.
And I love it. Yeah, I think it's awesome. I'm a big Fantastic Four fan, reading for years.
It's not Fantastic Four, bro.
You're right. It's the Future Foundation now.
Future Foundation.
Now that the Human Torch has passed away, they've changed their name and their costumes. And it's this Jonathan Hickman guy. He came on and everyone said he was going to be great, and I was sort of dubious. They kept calling him the new Alan Moore,
right,
which is too much. You know what I mean? You never do that.
Unfair.
He said, why are you doing that to me? I can't live up to this. But it's been great. You know what I mean? Really, really cool. Really sort of slow building.
How's that dynamic with Spidey in it?
Odd. I mean, but it kind of makes sense. If you were a Fantastic Four fan, you knew that Human Torch and Spidey were kind of best friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? One thing I recognize about Spider-Man, he didn't have a lot of real buddies.
Right.
His buddies were kind of jerks. Like, Flash Thompson and Harry Osborn were kind of rotten. You know? Like, and he doesn't have a lot of good close buddies in the superhero community. So, it's not a crazy stretch of the imagination that he would take over for his best friend
sort of like
on the team.
Team up too, in the Marvel team up comics, right? It was Spider-Man and the Human Torch, so it was kind of like
they like to tease each other and stuff. But
especially at the beginning, their first interactions in the first years were always they were always fighting. And
exactly.
At the end, that they're fighting on the same side.
Yeah.
That's right. And they're both teenagers, and they're both young and impetuous.
Right.
But you know what? It's really good. And if you're a Fantastic Four fan, it's one of these great books where it's got all the elements from all the years. You know what I mean? Well, a writer's obviously done his research, but it's not just a retro book. You know what I mean? Like dropping a bunch of names and stuff. It's actually still very, very current and fun.
Very cool.
No,
cool.
I like it.
Excellent. All right. Let's end new this week. We got a busy show. Lots of news. And we will... you know what? Did we... first of all... our guest, excuse me, we have to get paid.
Yes, that's
so
right.
Our guest
yes.
has to...
we didn't do... we forgot to do New This Week.
New This Week sponsor. Who was New This Week brought to you by, Brian?
New This Week is brought to
was,
you by...
Was brought to you
oh,
by.
Was brought to you. Sorry. New This Week was brought to you by the new DC number one issue encyclopedia. Yes, we know the timeline is totally confusing. That is why you can purchase the DC Reboot Encyclopedia for $99.95.
Wow, that sounds like a decent
beautiful
price.
Beautiful.
Sounds awesome. Yeah, very, very cheap.
Well, let's end this new this week here with a little bit of our musical interlude. And, you know, because we figured, you know, Aquaman did come out this week, why not have the old Aquaman theme song?
Awesome.
Why not?
Aquaman. business, that's where he'll be. Always defending you, yeah, you and me. Aquaman. He can swim faster than the fastest thing in the sea or on the land. With Mira, his beautiful queen, beside him, he'll fight with all his might till the end. Oh, you can always depend on mankind's truest friend, Aquaman.
Yes, Aquaman, sung brilliantly by Mel Torme.
Yes.
And the NBC
good.
Burbank Orchestra. Now, Chris, a great, as always, the talisman of segues.
I love doing those segues.
Yeah, a beautiful segue into industry news. And our guest, Brian, will read the industry news sponsor.
Industry news is brought to you by Alliteration. Tired of people forgetting your name? Whether you are Peter Parker, Lois Lane, Bruce Banner, or Lex Luthor, you know that Alliteration helps people remember your name. Why not try it out today?
That's a very good point.
That's
I
true.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
If only my name was Owen Owen.
Mm. All right.
Maybe I'd be a true Welshman.
Listen, I'm going to start off industry news this week with talking about... Oh, it's all over the internet, Chris.
Yeah, it's crazy.
This stuff about this porn... This DC porn.
Well, let's not call it porn. It's not really porn. It's
like, I've heard people call it porn on the internet.
It looks pretty racy from what we're seeing here, folks.
It's racy. I don't know if I call it pornography.
Okay, it's racy. So we're all looking, Brian.
Yes, I'm seeing. Right,
oh
my goodness!
We're looking at the Catwoman. Yeah. The cat is it Catwoman?
Yeah. So Catwoman number one last
yes.
week had a panel in it where she is. Kind of grinding the pelvic regions of
the Batman.
It's a little suggestive.
It is a little suggestive. he looks like he's kind of enjoying it, and she's a little aggressive.
And the caption is and not all the clothes came off or something like that. And then on the bottom it says next issue the morning after. So even the word bubbles on the top and the bottom are suggesting sex.
Yes. Yep.
Gosh darn it. And you know,
is this the kind of Batman we want?
No,
I mean really, the Batman I grew up with, we had Batman and Robin together. Boy Wonder.
I know. Well, what are you asking for again?
Maybe I'm wrong.
No, you know what? The Batman I grew up with rarely had a girlfriend.
Yeah,
I know that in older issues he did. You know what I mean? Vicky Vale and you know that type of thing. But I remember that whole '80s period. Well, he's just letting it out now after 20 years.
But maybe just hear me out for a second here, guys. Maybe
okay, go ahead.
Maybe DC is saying, you know what? If Britney Spears can go out and you know wear all these sexy clothing, and if there's sex on TV, and you've got shows like you know True Blood, and you've got all this sex in the movies and sex on TV, why not have it in comics anyways? Because we've got an adult audience who are reading these comics. Why not have some sort of sexual innuendo?
Okay, so is this then where DC's going with the New 52? DC's saying, okay, we're going to revolutionize the way comics are told with these New 52. It's a jump on story. You're going to love the stories. You're going to buy in, you're going to want to read about these characters, and right off the bat they're hitting us with like sex.
Well, you know what?
So now it's like, okay, that's first issue, so now you want more.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
Now you want the third issue to be even more risque.
Well, you got to reel them in somehow, right? So I don't know if they're going to go, they'll probably step back a few paces and then just go back to the same level of riskiness, right? I don't think they're going to go beyond what they are right now. I don't think they're going to have, like, you know, full frontal nudity or anything like that.
I'm looking at all you comic buyers, all the Wednesday crowd, next Batman's you pick up, next Catwoman's you pick up, scour that cover for hidden penises.
Are you allowed to say that on the radio?
I think you are.
Oh. Whoa.
As long as they're hidden.
As long as they're hidden.
What is this? Now, they're going to play on this sexuality thing, and they're going to be,
for sure.
They're going to be inserting things, you know, on the cover where it doesn't
just to excite,
us. I'm saying. They'll put something here that looks like something.
Yeah,
I just don't like. I think it's too.
But maybe this is what the way they're going to have to go to sell comics these days. Maybe they have to get with the times and realize that we've got a generation of readers who are more mature than the last generation of readers.
Yeah, right.
I say.
All right.
You know what? The one thing to remember: this is in Catwoman, right? Not in Batman. That we see all this sort of real sexuality and the real heavy stuff. Now, she's always been sexy.
Yeah, that's
true. You know what I mean? Ever since I've been interested in the character from the old Batman Adam West show, Julie Newmar, I think it was. Really cute.
Lee Mary Wither or Eartha Kitt.
Or Eartha Kitt.
Yeah.
And then I remember Michelle Pfeiffer in the movies and stuff. And even in the comics, she's always been. I remember when we were reintroduced to her in the 80s, they made her an ex-prostitute.
That's right.
So sex has always been a big part of this character, especially even when I was a boy. And this is going back to the 60s.
But do we need to see it in comics?
Well. I don't know. Good point.
They might keep it to the core character's title.
It's going
to
be
that's a part of her persona, right?
That will be the sexy Batman comic.
Okay, but hold on a second. So now we've got some sexiness in Catwoman number one, but now in Red Hood and the Outlaws, Starfire is wearing this tiny bathing suit that barely covers up anything and ends up having casual sex with another team member.
Right.
She's Nightwing's wife.
Not in the New 52.
Oh, wow. So this is some crazy fantasy.
Yeah, they're doubling up
on
this.
I think they're just sort of ramping up the sexuality in comics to try to compete with all the other medias out there.
I'm against it.
I am too. Because what happens
is... Like it or not, it's on its way.
What happens... What's the term you use when you... you see something enough, you dull your senses, and then you want a higher sensation.
Desensitized.
The point is there, if they're going down that road, then, 5 years from now, it has to be full-fledged porn in order for them to keep up in the ante.
And then we're going to get the Comics Code Authority in again.
That Walt's got a point. Starting off with... hot and heavy, what I mean? Really more suggestive than I've ever seen Batman before.
For sure.
And it's kind of an odd way to begin.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think it was probably done strictly for the fact to try to get readers into the comic.
Right.
Which is odd because I thought new readers has always been, hey, kids. Now, this is a weird thing to go, hey, kids. Yeah.
What you got to remember, though, is when they wrote this and when they drew this, nobody knew that 52 would be,
was gonna be selling
what
as well
it is
as it
now,
is.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So. They must have planned for this. This is a massive stunt, you know?
I don't think, it's been selling way better than
anybody
thought it would. I mean,
yes.
As we'll find out one of our points later on is that everything's selling out. Okay, but you know what? DC is not only... getting into trouble for sexuality. Now they're getting into trouble as well because of their depiction of mental illness in comic books. Apparently, there has been some criticism in the New York Times from a bunch of psychiatrists who are saying, you're not portraying mental illness the way it's supposed to be. In fact, you're perpetuating stereotypes.
What was the psychiatrist's name? Wortham?
Well, you'd think so.
Yeah. Wortham's grandkid.
Hilarious. Frederick Wortham's Seduction of the Innocent came out in 1955.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, it's kind of like the same thing's happening all
psychiatrists again. Are saying comics
are bad for people.
Yeah. Right.
Well, this is the quote here is saying that comics have such inaccuracies that perpetuate harmful stereotypes, and such stereotypes can in turn lead to discrimination and cause those with mental disorders to avoid treatment for fear of being labeled lunatics.
Yes.
So apparently they've been labeling people lunatics in the comics.
Right. Like the Joker.
Like the Joker, or perhaps Harley Quinn.
Well, hey, listen. I mean, and like here, a well listened to show like us. Talking about this.
Sure. Dozens of people.
Playing right up DC's alley with free publicity on this kind of stuff. Okay, we got to keep this moving, Chris.
Whoa.
Sorry, yeah, okay.
Let's go to Ghostbusters because we just talked about Ghostbusters.
Right, yes.
I want to talk about Ghostbusters, the movie, the original Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah, so the one with by Ivan Reitman with Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd.
Fantastic.
And Harold Ramis.
Yep.
No, who's the other guy? Who does your taxes?
Oh, Rick Moranis. Rick. Yeah. Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah. it's coming back to theaters. 500 U.S. theaters and some theaters in Canada as well.
Oh, like a re-release.
Basically a re-release of, 1981 or whatever it was.
I think so, something like that.
Those are mid-80s, I thought.
Mid-80s, but I mean... Who did they bribe? I know IDW's just came out with a comic, which we looked at today.
Yep.
Yes.
We were all talking about how Ghostbusters is a great property and it should always be out in the forefront.
Absolutely.
Is this kind of like the first salvo for another Ghostbusters movie? Okay, I'm sure it is.
It's supposed to be.
What's interesting is, so we've got the new Ghostbusters movie coming out, and it seems like, I don't know, mixed opinions. I got to get it out of there. Mixed opinions on this. One, I think it's kind of cool for a new generation of moviegoers to see what Ghostbusters would be like in the theater.
Yes.
Because you know what, it has been 20 some odd years, right? But at the same time, you know, can't they come up with new stories? Like, can't they come up with new stuff? Yeah. However, having said that, you know, Lion King came out last week.
Yep.
And was like top of the box office.
Was it really? Yeah. Wow, the 3D version.
Yeah, the 3D version came out, was number one in the box office.
That's what we've come to now.
But you know, and I got mad at that originally, but then I thought, you know what? I remember seeing like movies like The Jungle Book and The Aristocats when that came out.
Disney did it all the time.
They did it all the time. They brought back movies every generation, right?
You're right.
So why can't movies like Ghostbusters come out every generation? Why can't Star Wars come out every generation?
Well, you know what?
Right?
I'm going to say Star Wars might not be able to pull it off because as parents, I'm sure when our kid, you know, turns 3, all right, son, you're ready to watch Star Wars with Dad,
absolutely.
Right? You know what I mean? And it's one of those ones where way before they're ready, you're going to have them sitting down watching. The kid doesn't have a clue. He's bored. He wants to go to bed. No, this is the best part, kid.
Or
sit there and be quiet.
Or Indiana Jones, like Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
Isn't that great when they killed all the Nazis, boy?
Yeah.
But we saw those movies when we were quite young.
Absolutely.
And you know what? Ghostbusters is pretty scary. Especially when you're a kid.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It has that awesome combination of you're actually watching a scary ghost movie, and it's hilarious at the same time. And I think I was a real timid kid when I was young, and I remember thinking, oh, goodness. You know what I mean? It was one of the first, not a horror film by any means, but I had never seen anything like it. But the humor offset it, so the excitement was just fantastic.
Yeah.
It was good.
Is it one of the movies that parents, you know, peg on the calendar to introduce their children to?
I think, as you said, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Ghostbusters. I think Ghostbusters, for a kid in the 80s...
I don't think Ghostbusters is...
I thought it was defining. I remember the audience, when I saw it when I was a kid, got up and stood and sang the theme song at the end.
Right.
And you don't see that kind of stuff. I mean, when do you see people doing that anymore in a theater? So, I mean, it was
Rock
really...
Rock and Roll Picture Show, that's about it.
Maybe. But it was a bit of a zeitgeist.
Right.
You know what I mean? That kind of sort of thing that happens where you go, hey, E.T., I think, was another one.
Yeah.
And that was also re-released. So were the Star Warses. Indiana Jones has never done it. That's something that always surprises me. They've never gotten Raiders.
You know what? I guess the good news is there's going to be a whole bunch of young kids that are going to hopefully be impressed by the same things that we were impressed by.
Absolutely.
When you were younger.
Yeah. And it will hopefully further the franchise and new stuff will come out and it will hopefully just make it greater.
We talked about Star Wars, that it's amazing to see all these young kids, 5-year-olds, who are still devoted to it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So these things do transcend.
Well,
you know, they go to different... Go ahead, sorry.
Sorry, no. Speaking of Star Wars, I'm just going. This Blu-ray, right?
Yes.
It's like a DVD thing.
It's like a box set. Yeah, I know it's stuck on 8-track.
Right,
but you know, so DVDs have come out, but now they've gone beyond the regular DVD. I'm giving you a little technological.
Go ahead. I can take.
And now they have these things called Blu-ray discs.
Blu-ray
discs actually are, yes, you're absolutely right. It is being, the information is being read by a Blu-razor,
Blu-blazer.
And they're like the high definition movies. So it's a crystal clear kind of thing.
Right.
For a guy like you, I know for a long time you didn't even know you had HD on your TV.
I had HD. I was paying $60-something a month for a year and a half. And I thought I was watching HD. I came over one day and he goes, hey, you got HD. Why don't you plug it in? I go, what do you mean? It's plugged in. No, it's not. You have to turn. And
And you had an HDTV as well?
$60 a month.
We were watching a hockey game. And I'm like, don't you have HD? We should be watching this in HD. He's like, this is HD. No.
Oh, this is an SD up convert on his HDTV.
No, he just didn't go to the right channel.
Anyways. Listen, guys, $84 million this earned on its first week of release.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because
and 80 of that's mine.
Yes.
$80 of it.
Right.
I contributed.
This is crazy because new movies coming out in the theaters would love to get
$84 million? Yeah, that's a blockbuster.
That's a blockbuster.
It's huge.
$84 million.
Star Wars has just had a blockbuster in DVDs, in Blu-ray sales. Essentially. Yeah. Which is crazy.
Which is something that they how much does it cost to produce? They sold 515,000 Blu-rays.
Oh, holy smoke.
I'm thinking it costs a buck or two each to produce this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it didn't even cost them $1 million. No. I didn't see any massive marketing campaign for it.
No, it was, you're right. It wasn't. Quiet. But, I mean, it did. So with Star Wars, they probably didn't need it. You know, that was one of those things. We all knew already, you know, that it was coming.
Massive.
And
you
know what? They don't even, they still don't even have my $80 yet. I haven't
And you haven't even. Oh, so that's $84 million and $80 eventually when Chris gets it.
Yeah,
okay, that's good.
Now, there was
George Lucas is listening.
Guys, a bit of controversy because Lucas decided to make changes to the film for the Blu-ray release.
Yes, he did.
And not to release the original versions within the
no,
Blu-ray.
That's true. That upset fans.
And then there was talk of some sort of boycott, of some sort of Star Wars fan club boycott, which obviously did not
Well, you know, as much as Star Wars fans love to talk about, you know, how they would possibly boycott things, it always turns out that, you know, they just love the stuff too much and they don't end up doing anything about it. Like, I mean, I'm the same way. I don't like having any changes to that, to the Star Wars movie, but you know what? I'll still go out and buy it no matter what. I think, Brian, I mean, I think, I know you're
No, we talk about this a lot.
We're big fans of the movies, and I think we both have, what, 7 or 8 copies of each of the movies?
Like,
right?
3 VHS, 3 DVDs, you know what I mean, versions of it. I know, this would be the 7th version.
And yet, like quote-unquote suckers or fans, we will continue to keep buying.
So what? A new version comes out with different liner notes or different,
kind of
something?
Well, I think the big one, well, this one is HD. What I mean, and no. Well, I'm like you. I'm not really a big, like, you know, like, technophile. You know, like, and I've just gotten the HD TV last month.
Good
just got
you.
The Blu-ray last, like, 2 weeks ago for Star Wars.
I was gonna say, did you not get it? Just
I got
Star
it specifically
Wars?
To Star. I was not going to be the only boy without the Star Wars Blu-ray set and on the block. And you know what? It's noticeable night and day. It is.
Stellar.
Incredible. Especially if you're a geek who has watched it 100 times.
Right.
All of a sudden you look at it and you know.
As fresh as it new?
It looks amazing.
For the first time.
Fantastic. You're just like, I didn't know it could look like this. So you know, it is. It does look fantastic. The changes, though, always get the Star Wars fans riled up. We always debate it and wonder, you know, and get really upset and all that stuff.
And those kind of changes will go on forever. But you know what? Speaking of changes, do you like the way I did this?
Segways.
Changes.
Right.
This is a segue.
Yeah.
The new Man of Steel movie coming out by what's his name?
Zack Snyder.
I like that Zack Snyder kid.
He's a good kid.
So apparently, Eilert Zurer has replaced Julia Ormond in the new Zack Snyder's Man of Steel film. And my point about that is, who cares?
Yeah.
I know.
It's Soup's mom, right?
Yeah.
So one kind
Kryptonian
of...
Kryptonian mom.
One unknown starlet got replaced and got...
By another
unknown starlet.
Yeah, exactly. And in that same vein, you know... Catwoman's costume revealed.
Oh, I
saw that, Chris.
Really,
on the,
you know,
yeah.
Who cares?
And there's a picture of it.
Yeah,
and it looks like a picture of a woman in a black latex costume.
Oh, it's either someone going to some sort of, you know, fetish night,
right?
Or it's Catwoman, or perhaps both.
Yes, it's the Domin. How do you say that word?
Dominatrix.
Dominatrix thing.
Why are you gonna say stuff
like
saying, that?
I'm just saying.
Can I make a slight segue?
Go ahead.
Sure.
Just in that one thing we're talking about, comic book movie adaptations.
Yes.
Is it poisoning everything? I like comic book websites. I like I like The Wizard magazine. It used to be about comics. We used to talk about comics. Now you guys work here. I know sometimes you're not here, Chris, but Walt, you're here. I find the talk of the movie adaptations of comics has swallowed up.
Yeah,
it's more popular. So now this little tidbit, this little scene of, you know, Superman's.
Yeah,
you know, it's no one's
this
talking about.
Point.
It's bigger now than the comics themselves, and it's boring, and it's just really kind of.
This is our point, Brian. This is our point. These little things. Oh my God! New Catwoman in a mufti.
You I'm know, sick of it.
Made a mufti, whatever the hell you call those things. But Batman's new. Bane's new truck.
I know.
Things are getting press.
Yeah, that was big news last week.
Yeah,
we got a picture of Bane's truck. And like, this is news?
Yeah. No. Apparently it is.
Well,
I mean, is that a criticism of the star of the comic book fan? Are we too into the details?
I don't know what I mean,
and not the story. That's the thing.
You might be right. You might be onto something.
It's just too much.
Is it that, or has this stuff become so mainstream that people who aren't normally interested in comics are now becoming interested in the movies, and therefore this is stuff that they can talk about because they don't know about the comics?
But maybe it's a natural progression of being immersed. Like baseball fans, they'll talk your ear.
True, yeah.
They'll sit there and going, yeah, you know, and how about the game?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The game doesn't seem to matter to them.
No.
It's like you know, go on to MLB.com, the Vortex, and you'll spend 5 hours looking at stats and all this kind of stuff. And you know, the pitcher's ERA and his whip and his this and his that. And it's the same thing here. You know, people, when they talk about a movie, I'm sorry, when fanboys talk about a movie, the first thing they will talk about is the gate it got on the weekend.
Yes, absolutely.
Who gives a crap if it got 92 million or... But they say it with pride. Oh, yeah. You know, it opened with 73 million first weekend. Hey, hold on. Did you like the movie?
I know. Like, what about the storytelling? Because in the basic, this is all storytelling, whether it's a film or a comic. That's what has to survive. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but people... It seems to be secondary.
It's the details now.
Interesting about what you just said is they talk about it as if they had something to do with it.
Right.
As if they made the movie. Hey, Batman just made $84 million.
Yeah.
Or it's like something worthy about calling it. Totally called that.
Yeah.
I mean, and when you were saying about sports ball too, I saw this really kind of like very expensive looking commercial, and then it being about fantasy hockey teams. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden it was like your own fantasy hockey team, will it be, you know what I mean? Like, what the heck is happening?
But it's an extension of even going to a hockey game. And we're not going to stay on this for a long time.
Yeah.
In the old days, your pa used to go to a hockey game. Used to watch a hockey game.
Yeah.
Now it's like, you know, they got dancing girls coming on. They got, you know, We Will Rock You in between, you know, the face off. And there's like anything to keep your mind off the damn game.
I know. We're talking about the jerseys more than the game these days. Did you see the jerseys? The new jersey? You know what I mean?
The logo.
Oh, the new logo. Yeah. Whoa.
My daddy actually used to say he didn't like to go to hockey games anymore because he didn't like the music.
Right.
I can't hear anything. Well, I understand that, you know, I guess it is entertainment, but, you know, like, you know, it's, anyways, let's get off this heated debate we're having.
Yeah, I'm getting angry.
Before I hit somebody.
And let's have a little bit of musical interlude. And what better than the Super Friends?
Banded together from remote galaxies are 13 of the most sinister villains of all time. The Legion of Doom. Dedicated to a single objective, the conquest of the universe. Only one group dares to challenge this intergalactic threat. The Super Friends. The Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is the Challenge of the Super Friends.
Yes, the Challenge of the Super Friends.
Meanwhile, back in Aquaman's lair.
Is that the same guy, Ted Knight, there?
It might be, yeah.
Meanwhile,
back with Mary Tyler Moore.
Meanwhile.
Because remember, he was on that show.
Hello. Who's the boss there?
Ed Asner.
No, but who was his character?
Lou Grant, right.
Lou. Yeah.
All right. Oh, Lou.
Listen.
I thought you had a point about Lou Grant.
No, not at all. Listen, let's continue. And we have a sponsor for the second part of Industry News.
Our next segment is brought to you by Death Ray Machines. Why follow Baron Zemo when you could be Zemo? Stop waiting for megalomaniac supervillain to take over the world. Just do it yourself with your very own Death Ray Machine. Now available at IKEA.
Oh, yes. Well, there you go.
You know what? And do-it-yourselves are coming on.
But you know what? The only thing about buying it at IKEA, you have to assemble it yourself.
Yeah, but you
can do that.
It's like a magical
wrench. It really is. Yeah, that's true. It's almost like you have the cosmic cube in your hand.
Pretty well. Yeah, pretty well.
Yeah, it's true.
All right. Chris, I'm reading with despair.
With despair.
Despair.
Don't ever read with despair.
No, I had to. My beloved Optimus Prime might be offed in the IDW comic book.
No.
Optimus Prime is.
Hey, yeah. Man, let's play with toys.
Oh.
Right. Old man.
Wasn't he one of the G.I. Joes?
No, I think he was. Listen, I read a darn story. He's a Transformer, and they're talking about the death of Optimus Prime, so a 32-page comic. You know, killing off Optimus.
Okay,
Prime.
Well, here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
I didn't realize that deaths in comics were still popular these days. Apparently, they are. Of course, we had the death of Superman. We had the death of Spider-Man. No, who you mentioned? Some
that's it.
Was.
That's
the way this is going.
Captain America was huge a couple years ago.
The way this is going. We got the death of this skit.
seriously, like this is something that I didn't realize it was making a big deal out of.
Yeah, because it's been happening for 20 years. You didn't quite realize to catch on.
Well, Spider-Man just did they just off Spider-Man?
They did the ultimate Spider-Man.
Did I just say that? You guys all looked at me funny.
Oh, right.
No, well,
okay.
Yeah.
But okay, so IDW, they're small fry. IDW is one of the small guys. So they're watching Marvel, they're watching DC, raking in this cash and killing off people.
Yep.
So they're probably sitting at the meeting going, hey!
I think that's exactly what they
Someone's got to go.
Hey, someone's got to go. I think it's working.
Yeah. Well,
kill somebody.
And you know, who better than Optimus Prime?
Optimus Prime. Right.
The only character anybody knows.
Aren't they robots?
Yes.
No, they're sort of sentient robots. You know what I mean? Like, they sort of have souls.
And to the geek.
Yep.
Right, okay.
Yes. Hey,
so,
come on.
So you can't just rebuild an Optimus Prime?
No, they're aliens. They're robot aliens. You could, yes, I think you could.
Right.
But Optimus Prime has died before. This always happens.
Okay, but, and that was going to be my point, is that Optimus Prime died in the cartoon years ago. So is this going to be a big deal?
I think if they slant it right, I think with the publicity machine as we've seen. Listen, we're getting Catwoman costumes or whatever the hell her name. Batwoman costume. Was it Batwoman or Catwoman?
Catwoman.
Yeah.
What's the Batwoman? Yeah. Hey, your kids like.
Yeah, Optimus Prime.
You sound like my uncle. What's the Batwoman?
This will get press.
Well, yeah, probably. But, I mean, the one thing, it's actually something you were talking about, Walt, maybe we're going to segue into this later, is that which Optimus Prime is it? The comic book Optimus Prime? Does the movie Optimus Prime? Does the classic TV show? Does the toy? I mean, like, I remember this.
Tell the toy.
Well, this happened a couple of years ago when Chewbacca died in the novels.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember.
Remember?
Yeah.
Remember the, we mourned, Chris.
Chewbacca died in the novels?
Yes, he did. As much.
He did. So they said, this is it, his official death. But, I mean...
Nobody really died.
Come on, he's alive in our hearts.
But you are right, because the powers that be at the Hasbro said, hey, you know, the toy Optimus Prime is still alive, don't worry.
Oh, thank goodness.
Right? Oh, thank
you know, the movie
thank
guys
the Matrix.
Said, this is a different continuity.
Thank the Matrix.
Yes.
He's alive.
So,
well,
you know, so you are right. So here you have a character living independent lives in four or five different media.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a busy thing now. You know, like Optimus Prime himself has four or five different incarnations.
Well, and you know, what we're talking about is a great, great segue to the whole Optimus Prime thing. But we've got, here we have a property that has different lives and in different movies and everything, and now all of a sudden we've got Batman has the new year one comic book coming, or sorry, animation coming out.
Yeah,
adaptation of Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli's Batman Year One.
Well, classic.
So now we've got Batman the animated series, we've got Batman the movie, we've got Batman Live, we've got Batman toys, it just goes on and on and on, right?
Right, and they all seem to be living independent lives. In other words. It's like whoever the license holder is, say DC or Warner or whatever, they license it to Hasbro, they license it to Sony Pictures, they license it to, or I guess through their DC thing, license it to whatever Cartoon Network. So now these guys got their hands on this property, and I'm wondering what kind of artistic freedom they have to you know what I'm saying? This character, like Optimus Prime, like Batman, these guys are out there running around, influencing people, fans, affecting us in four or five or six different incarnations, the video game incarnation.
Yeah.
And are they all kind of, is there a mandate to tie them all together with like a common thread?
I think there's probably a general outline. I don't think there's a common thread or anything because they're all so different, right? And I think that's the whole idea, is that they realize that, you know what, that we're going to get the guy that loves video games, we're going to give him the Arkham Asylum video game version of Batman. You know, he's going to be a certain type of Batman.
Yeah, he's going to be nasty. He's going
to
be like,
because you're going to get to punch people and
punch people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we've got the animated one, which, you know, but this animated one is going to be completely different from the Batman the animated series one, which was a little bit, you know, he was still grim and gritty, but grim and gritty for like a, you know, an 8-year-old.
Right.
Whereas now this one is kind of like the origin of Batman. So it's going to be something like, you know, maybe a 15-year-old might like, because it's more of a little bit more mature, but not quite adult, and it's animated, so people are going to think it's supposed to be for kids anyways. So there's all kinds of different Batmans running around there, and I think they're all geared to try to get a different audience.
All of those different little Batmans all running around.
Well, I think the key word is multimedia. You know what I mean? And now I've always heard that term, but now we've got multi-everybody.
Right.
You know what I mean? We have all these different, and that seems to be the key thing. Make a whole bunch of Batman for anyone, so someone, somehow. And that's always interesting to me, especially girls, I find. Now we're getting more and more girl comic book fans. I mean,
right.
I remember when Chris and I worked in a comic shop years ago, you know, it was going back almost 20 years. It was very rare a girl ever came in. She was usually looking for directions. Or she had a slightly nerdy boyfriend and it was Christmas time and she wanted to buy him something nice.
Right, right.
It was very, very rare. Now I've been to the comic show and I was so surprised to see so many fans, right? But the average, no, I just shouldn't say average girl. Girls in general never used to know what we sort of geekier guys were talking about. So when all of a sudden they did know who Optimus Prime was, you sort of stood up and went, how did you, you know what I mean? Where did you find
it? Will you marry me?
Will you marry me instantly? Yes. But also, I'm always curious because now there's all these different avenues to know who, the X-Men is a surprising thing to me. All of a sudden I'll see someone, a girl in her 30s going, oh, I've always loved Rogue. How did you, you know what I mean? Even before the movie. And it was that cartoon that came out in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
X-Men
everyone's...
X-Men were a front runner. They were girl heavy on their team.
Yes.
Like they had a lot
definitely
of prominent characters.
But I don't know that
female.
A lot of, I'm sure there are tons of women, you know, listening or fans and everything, but a lot of women weren't reading back then when X-Men was at its, so they found it some other way.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, and that's what's kind of interesting to me, but, and I like that aspect of it, but now this whole thing where you're spreading the character so thin, I'm kind of getting back to the purist side. I want to go, where did it come from?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I remember we were talking about Conan, Walt, a couple of years ago, and I knew Conan from the movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then it was like, and I saw all these novels by Robert Jordan and all these kind of things, and you got these books in saying, read the Robert E. Howard stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that was so much better than anything that's come after.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny, the Conan movie just came out, and as I understand, I wanted to see it, just to see, now that I'm a Conan fan, but they botched it, as I understand.
Yeah, apparently they botched it.
So, I mean, I'm now this multimedia thing. I kind of want to go back and find out what's the core source of this character.
Material.
And it's usually quite strong because that's what initiated this springboard.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going long.
That's all right. No, I understand what you're saying because, you know, I read the Conan novels for the first time this past summer. Like,
I didn't know.
I read Red Nails and, you know, and so all of a sudden I... You know, from reading these novels, I had this great appreciation for the character that I never had before.
And no one's done it that way.
And, you know, so, and I don't understand why. But anyways, we got to keep
going.
All right,
let's keep going.
Speaking of original things.
Yeah, speaking of original things, I want to talk about, and I find this kind of a little bit funny, I guess, but Lord of the Jungle from Dynamite is hitting the stands sometime soon, in a week or two, October, I believe. And that celebrates basically Dynamite Entertainment celebrating the 100th anniversary of the appearance of Tarzan in literature. And that was in a pulp magazine called All Story Magazine, October 1912. Edgar Rice Burroughs' Tarzan. Back in comics.
Right. This is crazy. So this character has now been around for 100 years.
100 years.
Tarzan.
Wow.
Now, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, is he in the public domain? You and I, and you, Brian, could write a Tarzan
comic. I believe you're right.
Wow.
You're right, yeah.
Yes.
And so this is interesting, but you know what? You and I were talking about it before the show, and you brought up an excellent point. Is Tarzan really a popular character these days? And the fact that they're calling it Lord of the Jungle, are they trying to, you know, get people interested in something that might not be Tarzan?
Right. There's no Tarzan in the title.
Yeah.
It's called Lord of the Jungle.
They're trying to celebrate Tarzan without Tarzan being in the title.
In it. Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of like saying, you know, let's talk about Star Wars, but we'll call it something that has nothing to do with Star Wars. We'll call it... the battle for wars in space.
Okay. I think I know what you're talking about. Not to cut you off, Wald. I think it's this idea is that it can't sound corny. And it's these marketing researchers, I think, who are like, listen, Walt, I think you called it, is Tarzan a death word? Yeah. If you say Tarzan, do people go, oh, that sounds corny? Yeah. And I'm noticing it, there's something to that. They're probably, I mean, they'd love to put Tarzan in the title, yet they go, yeah, listen, our things show that if we put Tarzan or this or that, somehow it has to be cool. We are in the age of cool. We're still there. And that kind of, I find, birth bothersome. Cool. The birth of cool. So to call it Lord of the Jungle, I mean, we're talking about Edgar Rice Burroughs. A movie's being made of one, a character that's never been made before of mm-hmm. by him.
Yeah.
I haven't read the Tarzans, but I've read all the John Carter of Mars stories.
Yes.
And the new movie is just called John Carter.
Right.
And again, they've taken out of Mars. Yeah. There's something corny. Now, everyone hated it when George Lucas called Attack of the Clones Attack of the Clones.
Yes.
Everyone all of a sudden was, that was the most cornballiest name.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How could he come up with it in this? You know what I mean? His other names didn't sound like that. Empire Strikes Back. It's pretty corny. It's because it's in this sort of mindset now, we don't see it that way. But I think he's trying to push back on that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think
not to go back to George, but like
no, but
George,
I think you're right.
I know
going back to those
first
older
name basis.
Those
first
older
name basis
kind of
with George,
where it had like the serials and stuff. Like
yeah,
that, right?
But to say the Lord of the Jungle and not put Tarzan, maybe Walt's onto something.
My take on Tarzan is, and I don't know. I honestly think the character, the whole premise of the character, just it's past its time. You got to remember, he's a white European in black Africa.
Yeah.
And because he's a white European in black Africa, he's like the king of the jungle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it just doesn't ring well right off
I suppose.
The
yeah. There's always those guys who. I've never read him, though. I'd like to. I read the John Carters and liked it. And I like Edgar Rice Burroughs. So I've always wanted to go to Tarzan and check it out.
Well,
here's your chance.
I think I will. I want to read Tarzan, not Lord of the Jungle.
All right, listen, we're running out of time. I want to talk about, Albert Uderzo.
Yes.
The beloved creator, the drawer of Asterix and Obelix. Oh. At the age of 84, he's retiring.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know, here's a guy that, you know, has created a crazy amount of comics. Well, it said here, Uderzo and Goscinny, and I think he was the other original creator of Asterix.
The Goscinny, right.
Yeah.
The Goscinny.
Daughter, and received trophies to mark the 350 millionth Asterix book sale.
Yes.
350 million copies.
Listen, DC,
of
you think you're doing good here?
I know.
52.
Yeah.
200,000 JLAs, you got nothing,
that's
buddy.
350 million. What I mean, if you sold 350 million of anything, you'd be a billionaire, right? Like it's
Asterix is huge.
Anyways.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. It's a non-hero. It's a European property. I think they're making another movie. Gerard Depardieu, of course, the famous French actor, stars as Obelix.
Yeah, and it's going to be called On Her Majesty's Service,
right?
In 2012.
And I just think it's great. I think it's like they're the little underdogs, and I always refer back to. Not sure if you and I talked about it last year on the show, but last year when they when McDonald's tried to run an ad campaign with Asterix Obelix in America,
the French
go, "Mon Dieu, sacre bleu!"
They're very protective.
The thing though is too, when you think about it, is you got to remember the Gauls, the village, they were fighting the imperialists, the Romans, the all Pax Romana. You know what America is
basically,
now. So basically, you know, McDonald's represents Rome. Home, right?
And they were trying to fight against
Asterix sold out, man.
Asterix sold
you
out.
You sold out, man.
Sold out to the men.
But not only that, I think that Asterix and Obelisk, I mean, the Europeans view comics and the comic art form completely different from the way North
You're
Americans
absolutely
do, right?
They
view it as an art form. Whereas we still kind of view it as kiddie stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so I think they were like, "Hey, we wouldn't go ahead and put your Mona Lisa in a McDonald's commercial. Like, you know, we wouldn't take all these crazy pieces of art and make fun of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would have respect for them, and that's basically what McDonald's was doing to their art form.
Right. Right. You know, absolutely. So. Right. All right, Chris. Oh man,
we're running out of time. We're running
out of time here.
But, you know, let's have a quick musical interlude here with Spider-Man.
Thank you.
All right, Chris, the final portion of the show is brought to you by the Toronto Cartoonists Workshop's Industry Night, presenting DC's New 52, Francis Manapul's Flash number one.
Well, that's a big mouthful there.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, this is great. So basically the idea behind this is we've got Francis Manapul is going to be doing a workshop, an industry night in Toronto at 587A College. And basically, it's pay what
this
you can.
This Friday, September 30th.
Cool.
And basically, you can go. It's got an exhibition of his artwork from Flash number one. He is the writer as well, so you can go and get things autographed. You can purchase a copy of the book. You can get original Francis Manapul artwork
from the Flash. You can buy it from there, right?
From the Flash himself.
No, I meant from Flash number one.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant you can buy it from Flash.
No, Flash only works at our store.
Oh, right. Anyways, and you know what? This is fantastic. So you can go and meet the artist. You can get autographs, get artwork, whatever you want.
Yeah, so this Friday, Francis Manapul is going to host this little thing. And admission is pay what you can. They suggest $4. And the proceeds will go to the Joe Shuster Awards, which is Canada's awards ceremony for Canadian comic books.
This is awesome. I mean, what a great chance to go in and meet the creator and see what comics are all about.
So, guys, please, this Friday, September 30th, 7 to 11 p.m., I don't know the name of the building. Its location is 587A College at Clinton, which is the cross street, I guess. And like I said,
kind of a rough neighborhood.
Support a great cause. Support Joe Shuster Awards.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I was just going to say, speaking of meeting creators, just very quickly, they've announced a quick guest list for the New York City Comic Con Spotlight, the one at the Javits Center.
Yeah, which is happening 2 weeks from now, which we've got to throw a plug in before the show's over here, right?
So, and just very quickly, because we got one more bit of a news item here. Some of the guests include Frank Miller, Adam Hughes, Brian Azzarello, Frank Quitely, Jeff Smith, Joe Quesada, Robert Kirkman, Stuart Immonen, Todd McFarlane,
Jeff Johns,
Tim Sale, Stan Lee, Neil Adams, Joe Simon. You know, this is if you're going to go to a comic convention anytime in the next couple months, this is the one to go to for
sure. That's
sure.
Awesome. Yeah. Wow, really good.
Okay, finally, a little very quickly hometown front. Gary Burton of Burton's Comics.
From right here in the Hammer.
Right here in the Hammer.
Whoa.
Having some issues with Magic the Gathering.
Yes, so on ICV2, Gary wrote in about Magic the Gathering's allocation. I guess Gary has been selling Magic. He's a great guy, and he runs a nice little shop down in the city. And he's been selling, he wanted to become a core store. So if you sign up with Magic to become a core store, you get stuff earlier, you get, you know, more stuff, and you get, like, chaser cards and rarer cards.
You get a little bit of special treatment.
Right, special treatment. So he says since he's been on this thing, and since Magic's had a resurgence, every time he orders a new set, he's allocated like down to 25% of his order. So he'll order like 100 boxes and he'll get 25
right,
or whatever.
Right, yeah, this is
and,
crazy.
And it's ticking him off badly. And he's writing in that the local Hamilton Walmarts are loaded with Magic.
Yeah, and he can't get product. Yeah.
So the kids are going to Walmart buying their Magic. And to become a core store, okay, to become one of these specialty stores for Wizards of the Coast, you have to provide a game-playing area.
Right.
So Walmart doesn't provide a game-playing area.
Uh-huh.
So this poor schmuck's got to provide space for these kids to come and play.
Yeah.
They're bringing their packs that they bought at Walmart.
And then using his store.
Using his store to play, getting into little arguments and fights that he has to settle and stuff
like that.
Leaving
messes and all
that. Leaving messes and all that crap. And he doesn't even get any of the money. And so it's a great little rant. Check it out, icv2.com. Gary Burden from Burden's Comics chimes in on the way Wizards of the Coast and Magic is treating him.
Yes, well,
good job, Gary.
Give him heck, Gary.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is all the time we have for the day. We've really run out of time here.
Yes,
take it away, Walt.
Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone and engineered by James McIntosh. For suggestions, comments, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Scroll down, click the podcast link, scroll down to the bottom, and enter your comments in the comments field.
And remember, I am Batman.
And please support your local comic book shop. And Brian, can you remind them, please, to support their local comic
Support your local comic shop,
don't,
everybody.
Don't report them.
And report them. Report them if anything's weird going on. Just, you know, that's just healthy.
Just saying.
And thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks a lot, and have yourself a great day.